Meep. What's up, Doc? Just a quick warning. Our conversation on this podcast may contain spoilers.
In a world filled with movies, comedies, dramas, thrillers, and action-packed adventures, only one podcast dives deep into the magnificent titles found on HBO Max, and only one man can host such a show. Me! Hello, everyone, and what's up, Doc, as it were. I would like to welcome everyone to the jam and invite you all to slam with me, Matt Rogers, the host of HBO Max Movie Club. That's the podcast you're listening to right now. That's the gig we're doing. What is it exactly? Let me tell you all about it. We're going to be talking about a different HBO Max movie that's on this platform, this incredible. Can we just give it up? This platform, we got to give it up for the platform. And this week, we're talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy. 25 years ago, or exactly one Dua Lipa ago, that's how I like to measure time. Every 25 years is a Dua Lipa. You'll get to know me. We had Space Jam, okay? A cultural touchstone for not just basketball fans, not just fans of the Looney Tunes, because this famously was a sort of smash up of Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes, the world of the 1990s NBA and the world of the Looney Tunes. But it also entertained kids everywhere. It was a combination of live action and cartoons, which really we hadn't seen before. Just kidding. We saw it in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but really we hadn't seen before. And people still remember it fondly to this day. So just a little background on the first film, Space Jam. This was the 10th highest grossing film of 1996. The top three were Independence Day, followed by Twister, followed by Mission Impossible. So we loved our big special effects movies at this time, okay? We loved to see sort of explosions happening, aliens descending, white tank tops being worn incredibly. Sorry, that's more of a costume design thing about Twister. I just really love Helen Hunt in that white tank top. I'm gay, by the way, and you'll sort of get to know me as you listen to this more. And I also do want to tell everyone that I did used to be a power forward on the court. All right, I do have a little bit of basketball know-how. Trust me, I used to have a boombox out there next to me on the court, and I would blast the soundtrack to Space Jam while I shot baskets at a hoop and missed most of the time, but sometimes made it in. And really, is it really important that you make the shots, or is it more important that you have fun trying? I guess the answer to that is if you're a professional basketball player, it is important that you make the shots. And if you're a kid out there having fun, then it really doesn't matter. But anyway, speaking of that soundtrack, today when I was looking through the soundtrack again, just skipped down a few tracks to find the iconic song, For You I Will, by the iconic Monica. All right? Come on now. I'm going to talk to Naomi Ekperigin in a few minutes, one of my good friends and one of the funniest comedians in the world. And when I checked in with her that it was cool we do Space Jam, she was like, oh yeah, that soundtrack was a staple for me, a childhood staple for me. Okay, so we're going to be getting into that for show. Also joining me later on in the episode is Jeff Bergman and Eric Bauza. Now, these are truly icons. Okay, these are voiceover icons. They voice Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck in the film, and also so many more characters. And I don't know, maybe you'll meet some of those characters later on in the episode as well. No spoilers here, but they might have stopped by. So we got Naomi, Jeff, and Eric all joining me to talk about Space Jam 2, A New Legacy, an incredible film, a fun film, a dynamic film that if you love the original, you're gonna love this one. Oh my gosh. Baby, not for nothing, here's the funniest woman in the world. I would cross the ocean for her. I would go and bring her the moon. I promise you, for you, I will do all these things. Naomi Ekperigin, my queen. Sorry, but queen.
Wow. That is the greatest introduction I've ever received. You know, bringing Monica to the forefront of everyone's lives and everyone's hearts in that way is huge.
I mean, this is what she deserves. But the reason I really bring her out in this podcast episode, right at the top, even, is because she features predominantly on the Space Jam soundtrack, which I had forgotten until I gave it a spin today. And you said to me this was a soundtrack that was just preeminent in your life.
Honestly, it's like literally one of the greatest soundtracks of all time. I remember being obsessed. And it's funny because 96, I would have been about 13.
Yeah.
Was I really into soundtracks then? Was I really like listening to movies being like, I got to pick that up.
I got to cop that soundtrack. That score.
I got to cop it. But my God, it was like, it was everyone who was anyone.
Yeah.
Okay. That, you know, they had to have a Diane Warren joint for You, I Will, but we're talking R. Kelly, Busta Rhymes, Coolio, Seal. I mean, they're giving you everybody.
I had forgotten that I Believe It, I Can Fly came from Space Jam. And here I was sitting there and I pulled up the Spotify page and I was like, oh my God, I Believe I Can Fly. And then I went to click it and I was like, no, not going to give them the streaming, not going to give them the revenue.
You can't give him that rev. Don't give him that rev. He don't need it.
No.
He don't deserve it.
No, okay? He don't deserve it. He don't need it. So I'm just going to sort of sing it to myself in my head and skip down and play For You I Will by Monica, which is really the jam.
Truly.
Truly the jam. And is that Diane Warren?
Yes, it's Diane Warren. I mean, come on, any ballad, right? Like any ballad, any ballad we remember is Diane Warren. She does all of them.
You know what's crazy? So she wrote For You I Will for this film in 96. The next year, Because You Loved Me from Up Close and Personal, of course, sang by Celine Dion. And then the year after that, How Do I Live from Con Air, both nominated for Oscars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just what she does. She creates, I'm going to call it a banger, but an emotional banger.
An emotional slow banger.
She just has this way. And it's like, and I feel like, especially because as a teen, as a tween, you know, I was so horny and so into love.
Yes.
Oh, horny give me and into a Diane. I was like, give me a Diane Warren ballad.
Oh my God.
I was
God.
Like, and I need this.
The next year, she was on a roll. The next year was I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, famously of Armageddon. And then the next year was Music of My Heart from Music of the Heart, starring Meryl Streep, sung by NSYNC and Gloria Estefan. So truly employing all the girls, putting musical notes in all the girls' mouths.
Exactly. Honestly, she's given more people number one hits than anybody else in the world.
Oh my gosh. I mean, truly. I mean, I think the only song that's not Oscar nominated in her oeuvre that should have been is For You I Will from the Space Jam soundtrack. Space Jam needed an Oscar nomination.
Oscar. Very much. And it's like no one wanted to respect it, but it's like put some respect on Space Jam's name.
Let someone do it. Now, you've viewed the film as I have, Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Yes.
I just
wanted
to sort of run through some talking points with you, because this film it's a callback to the original, but also new. Now, seconds into the movie, I'm sure you heard this one, the Maya ODB classic.
Yes.
You know that I think I was probably like 8 or 9 years old, little white boy on Long Island, shaking my ass in front of my house on the street, like just like singing Ghetto Superstar. That took me all the way back.
I know. I was like, a time, a place. I know exactly who this boy is. I said, young LeBron, I am you. You are me.
Young LeBron was into that song and also addicted to his Game Boy. So a major theme of the film is generationally the Jameses, the LeBron and his kid, Dom. So LeBron is addicted to his Game Boy, and his coach says, you better throw that Game Boy away or else you're never going to become LeBron James. And he does throw it right in the trash. And of course, he famously comes the king LeBron James, and his kid is addicted to tech. Were you sort of susceptible to Game Boy or video game culture?
Absolutely. Game Boy. I will say that's the only one I had. I could play Tetris till the cows came home. Like, my mom had to take it from me because I would just like, it would be like, go to bed. And I mean, I had that old school black and white one, you know what I mean? Like, real original. I thought it was excessive that LeBron threw it in the trash. I thought he could have just regifted it to someone else.
It felt like this is for the movie. He wouldn't really do this. This is excessive. You know, that thing is expensive.
Exactly. That was expensive. Because his friend, I like the setup, his friend was like, I just got the new one. You can have my old one, which felt very real.
Yes.
And then he immediately threw it in the trash.
Like,
no, LeBron.
I also think it's the reason why I'm not LeBron James today.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's so funny to think, I'm like, wow, the fork in the road, you know, diverging. And I said, you know, the difference between me and LeBron is that I kept playing.
That's it.
I was holding that game.
I couldn't.
And he
put
was
it
out
down.
On the court, and that's it.
What did we think about sort of the flash to the future and LeBron saying to his kid, you need to shape up and play basketball? Are you going to be saying, you know, to your children, you better shape up and become a comedian?
I would never do that to them. You better shape up and never step foot on a stage. I swear to God. I don't want to see you sweeping a stage.
No.
I don't want you in a black box. Never.
I'm never taking you to a show.
Never taking you to a show.
As far
you will
as
never
you know,
tread the boards.
Theater but, does not exist.
Exactly. People will be like, I want to do what they do on TV. I go, not possible. They're robots.
You know? Those little people in the radio, they're really little people in the radio. And you're a normal sized person. It'll never be you.
Okay, this really ties into the movie, talking about little people in the computer, in the radio, inside, so many levels.
What did you think when that was Don Cheadle in there?
First of all, he's my favorite part. Don Cheadle was my favorite part because he was like really, you know, again, we know him as being, you know, so many serious characters. Mm-hmm. Or even like his comedies are kind of like the dark stuff, you know, he'll do.
Yep.
But he was just really having some fun with it. Like, Don Cheadle was literally like, I want my kids to watch this movie and think I'm really cool.
Yep.
And I thought he was so fun, and he was so mean.
He was so mean. And so I'm assuming that you enjoyed his performance as Al G. Rhythm, which is sort of a clever play on the word algorithm, which is a villain every day in my life. How does your algorithm get you?
Yeah, my algorithm. Well, honey, I'm trying to beat the algorithm in real life because I live to mute.
Yeah.
I am muting people on that IG. There is nothing I love more than muting a bitch, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say it? Mute a bitch?
You can say mute a bitch. I'm almost positive that, well, this is not TV. This is not podcasting. This is HBO Max. So you understand, we're allowed to sort of go there the way that Sex and the City went there. You know,
right,
the way that the Sopranos went there. This podcast is going there.
So this is the Sex and the City of podcasts?
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing.
They've never heard women talk like this, the way we are now.
Oh, God, we're so brave. And I am such a Steve's mom.
Oh.
But
I'm a Magda.
We love that.
No, just kidding. I'm a Carrie. Come on now. Samantha Rising.
Yes, definitely a Samantha Rising. Very much.
How do you identify?
My moon is in the house of Charlotte, most definitely, because there is a part of me that's very like, hello, give me a jubu.
I see that.
Just like Charlotte.
100%.
Like, I just, you know, like, give me a very large penthouse apartment.
Yes.
You know, but then a touch of Miranda.
Right.
A touch of Miranda.
Right, because we are here to get down to it.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
We ain't got time for no nonsense.
No. So one of my favorite parts of the movie that I want to know if you connected with as well is the sort of part where they were flying through the Warner Brothers atmospheres and like they passed all the different cinematic universes. I want to know for you, which Warner Brothers cinematic universe do you think you would thrive in the most?
That is so interesting. I do believe I would thrive in the world of Wonder Woman.
Yes. I agree.
Like, that gave me did they shoot it on a Greek island? Who knows? It feels like they did, and that's where I would like to be. It feels like it's a lot of, like, female empowerment, body positivity, and we would be on the Mediterranean diet, which is just good for you.
And also just, like, get your delts into shape, sort of, like, you see those women, they're always sort of just cut. They have that sort of, like, that healthy, toned, you know what I mean?
Yes.
How you want to look. Healthy, toned, muscular, still strong, thin, you know?
But thin, but muscular,
thin, but
soft.
Muscular. Toned.
Toned, soft.
Okay, so Naomi, I'm so happy you're going to be here for me when I debut my first segment, which is going to be my a segment every single time on every episode of this podcast, which is, but how is it a queer narrative? So I'm going to be assessing all the movies that we talk about, and I'm going to be asking the question, but how is it a queer narrative? And I
love that for this.
I would like sort of techno music underneath this while I say it. Here we go. Daddy issues. Flamboyant villain in a glittery jacket. Balls. Steve and Yen apparently making me horny even in a 30-second cameo. Calling someone king repeatedly. And those are the ways in which this movie is a queer narrative. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I have never been... more enlightened, but also seen, but also vibing. Also, especially, I mean, a boy not wanting to play sport.
Can you say that over a techno beat?
A boy not wanting to play sport.
Thank
sport,
you so much. Sport, sport. Yes. Oh my God. And you got the reverb on there too, as if it was a 1996 house mix itself.
Well, for in honor of Space Jam 1.
Yes, you know, exactly.
Give us 1996 energy.
100%. We have to have it. All right. So I guess my big moment with this movie mm-hmm. was yeah. when I had to pause it and stop to laugh out of joy and out of just sheer enjoyment
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
when Sonequa Martin-Green, who plays LeBron James's wife, sort of yes. looks around in the world of Space Jam and she realizes what's happening. And she looks at LeBron James and she says,
You gotta win this game and get our son back.
And I was like, okay. That is a beautiful distillation of the whole movie right there. Yeah, we could have started it right there. We know exactly what it is.
Yeah, we know that immediately. But I will say the twist on this, you know, with this being it, the game, the world of the game they're playing, right? The video game basketball, it being the Suns' creation is a twist. Do you know what I mean? Because it's almost like you want it to almost be hard for LeBron, or you want to see the extent to which he plays by his son's rules. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. It's not just, you know, here's the thing in this movie, okay?
Yeah.
Dom is not just like a kid who sits in the house all day on the couch eating chips and playing video games. He has designed his own game, you guys. So 100%. He's a future king yes. in the world of video games. And so it's like, you want him to stay on that track because yes. he's out here young, gifted, and black making moves on a technical level. We want Dom.
So the fact that we have Dom, I'm like, LeBron, support Dom. Also, you got another son who loves basketball.
Exactly. That's why you have two kids. You got to have two kids for this reason.
You have two kids for this reason. One smart kid and one athlete.
Yeah. You did it great. They did great. And I'm like, but LeBron, it's like, but you know what I was trying to think about it from his character slash LeBron, right? Because it's like LeBron, but then LeBron character. Because mm-hmm. I believe LeBron IRL is like a much more like do what you want to do. But also right. IRL, I bet they all play basketball.
Right.
But he's like, but I bet, you know, because for him, it's like basketball is how he made it, right? Yeah. This is like how it all happened. So for him, he's like, that's the route I know and I trust to make it. And this video game stuff is a little dicey. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I think that's how he's feeling as a dad.
It's
but
a
I was
risk.
Like, you better hurry up. It's a risk.
It's, and I'm like, LeBron James's household is the only household where, like, being probably doing good in school is the risk. It's like, no, you should try to be a professional athlete. That's the role. That's the role we see in your future. That's right. The path we know how to pave.
Exactly. Exactly.
What did you think of the movie's message ultimately that the only way to win in basketball is to be yourself?
Yeah, that's not true. You know, that's like really hard because that's not how sports are played. But I really, like, it was funny because it's like the game is obviously like so lawless. Like Dom, it's like style points, which I did think was very funny.
I love style points.
You can get style points. I feel like that's what I would only get.
Yes.
Yeah, like I would never land the ball in the basket, but it would look very fun.
Exactly.
You know, but then it was, you know, of course I want to see the tunes be toony. You know, right. I was ready for the tunes to tune out. Turn up and turn out. Tune out. What do we do?
Tune up.
Tune up and tune out.
Tune up and turn out.
Thank you. That's much better.
Naomi, I want to thank you so much for coming on this. The inaugural episode of the HBO Max Movie Club. I can't think of anyone better. Do you have any words of wisdom to any aspiring athletes out there or aspiring game designers out there?
Just like Dom in the movie Space Jam, A New Legacy, you need to do you. Okay? Do you, as the kids say. Never give up.
Never
and it don't up. Matter if your daddy is 7 feet tall Mm-mm. and a billionaire who don't get you. You keep doing it until you, and then you're going to face a Don Cheadle. You're going to face a Cheadling sequence. And at some point, and that's a metaphor, okay? Mm-hmm. Whatever your Cheadling sequence is, you're going to mm-hmm. face it and you got to see through it and keep on pushing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a Cheadle is a cheater. And that's just yes. the way it is. We say that with all the love in the world for Don Cheadle. And I say this with all the love in the world for you. I love you, Naomi Ekperigin. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You are the best in the game, Matt.
Oh, it's not true. Everyone, coming up literally right now, we have my interview with Jeff Bergman and Eric Bauza, who voiced Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck in the film. And you know what? We might even hear from a Looney Tune or two. Well, all right, what a treat for us to be joined by sorry, but legends. I mean, it's not every day that we get legendary voice actors in the damn chat. And what for our very first episode of HBO Max Movie Club, this is huge for us. We're joined by Jeff Bergman and Eric Bauza from Space Jam, A New Legacy, but also so much more. Guys, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I mean, huge. And I just want to sort of impress upon the listeners out there what exactly we're dealing with here. Could you please just, starting with you, Jeff, tell us who you voice in the movie?
I'm the voice of Bugs Bunny, Sylvester, Yosemite Sam, Fred Flintstone, and Yogi Bear.
And I have to say flat out, it is shocking knowing that that's true and knowing this is your real voice. I mean, the talent jumped out.
This is not my real voice, Matt.
There it is. And what about you, Eric?
I mean, you say legends, but I say I see one legend and just a student in training.
No. Well, let me make that. I am the host here, okay? So I'm going to name
that's
the legends.
True. But I say anytime I'm in the booth with either Jeff, Bob, or Candy, I'm always kind of just in awe myself. I grew up watching these guys and gals. But in the film, I have the honor of voicing Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, Foghorn Leghorn, Marvin the Martian, and Porky Pig.
The versatility. We love it. And I have to say, the movie is such a blast. It's so much fun. What was it like to know that you were going to be in the sequel? Because I'm sure being such incredible, illustrious voiceover actors, you're at least fans of or admirers of the original Space Jam, as is everyone in the world.
Yes, it was quite a shock for me to think that this would even happen. I mean, none of us really knew that this film was ever going to come about. So to be in it and then to be a part of it and to do it. And it was odd because we did it all remotely, Matt. So we didn't get to really see anybody. But, you know, everybody put their big boy pants on and we just we got it together. And it was it's just extraordinary to be a part of this film.
And to put pants on during the pandemic, already a huge, huge accomplishment there, and big boy pants even more. How about for you, Eric? I'm sure were you a fan of this movie like everyone else?
Well, pants for any of the Looney Tunes characters is very rare.
Huge.
Most of them don't wear pants or any clothes. But yeah, just like Jeff said, it, you know, a film that's been in the making for a very long time. I was part of another panel with some of the producers on it, and they were saying that this had been in the works for over like 10 years. And even before LeBron James was attached and even after LeBron was attached, it was still years and years trying to find the right time to make it. And they finally found the pocket and... Yeah, it was. I think it's another one of those things where obviously it's nice to be in the same room so we could bounce off of each other. But you have to kind of imagine what the other person, how they would say it, how they would react. And I think between me and Jeff, we have a lot of practice talking to ourselves with the multiple characters that we've been able to play over the years.
So usually, just for me and for everyone at home that doesn't know, usually are you, when you're doing voice acting, are you in the booth with other actors and do you prefer that? So this was a very different scenario?
Well, I mean, this was extremely different. I mean, we had obviously on the Zoom calls, we had the director, we had the animation director and the producer. So, I mean, they're certainly giving us a lot of context in what's happening in the scene. But like Eric was saying, we don't have the other actors. I mean, Eric wasn't there and certainly Candy and Bob wasn't there. So we can, you know, kind of bounce off each other because you do get different reads. But at the same time, I don't think Tom Hanks and Tim Allen ever met each other until the premiere. So they recorded all their lines separately and Pixar often does that. So like Eric said, we just kind of have to imagine how is that line going to be read? And the directors are really great at helping us to give that additional context.
Yeah, we definitely rely and trust on the directors. Of course, they're the ones watching and listening to everything that we do. I'm sure Jeff can agree that sometimes when you watch some of these things back, it's almost like an out of body experience, because mm-hmm. we go through these lines over and over and over again. We've been working on this for how long, Jeff, do you think?
No, it seems, about a year and a half or so.
Wow. Yeah, maybe longer. Yeah. And it's amazing too, like how fast they turned this out, you know, considering the difference in animation styles.
And I have to know, like, as I'm talking to you guys and I'm wondering, how do you find out as a young actor, comedian, that you have all of these characters inside of you? I want to know how, starting with you, Jeff, how did you find yourself as a voice actor? How did it become the level it's become now? How did you start out?
Well, I don't think I ever had the design that I wanted to be an actor, a voice actor, a mm-hmm. comedian. I think growing up watching impersonators like Rich Little and Frank Gorshin and Fred Travellina, those were the guys that kind of inspired me. And then seeing Mel Blanc on the Jack Benny show, this is before cartoons, and right. that really, I thought they were magicians when I saw them. I thought, wow, that's so cool. And I tried to do voices, and I don't think I sounded like anybody until maybe I was in high school. And my parents were just, we'll encourage them. And then I think my voice started to change a little bit, like around my junior year.
And that's okay.
Yeah, thank God.
And that's okay.
Yeah, thank goodness it changed. And so that's when I think I started to think, wait a second, maybe I have a knack for this. Or, you know, I mean, if you're passionate mm-hmm. about something, eventually, you know, something's going to manifest. You're going to be able to find, you know, your space in what you can do if you love what you do that much. So that's right. kind of where it started for me, like in high school. I started to figure out, like, I think I can kind of do this maybe.
Right. And so for you, Eric, did it start with impressions of people that you knew, or was it original characters, or a little bit of both?
Well, at least with the Looney Tunes, definitely Saturday mornings with the mm-hmm. reruns of the original shorts, the Bugs Bunny and Tweety show. Like, and again, Saturday mornings and after school back in the day when that's the only time you could get cartoons. Now it's like you can get them 24/7. Kids are so spoiled these days. But those reruns that really got me into animation, because I like to draw. I actually got into voiceover through animation on the other side of the glass. But keeping with voice impressions, I think high school was, you know, impersonating teachers. I think I was the valedictorian, not because I was smart, but because they're like, let's just have him make fun of teachers for 40 minutes in their voices. But yeah, I like Jeff, I just never thought I would, you know, you often look at those heroes of ours from the past and go, wow, they really did something. And then suddenly we're being interviewed by yourself for a film that millions Iconic. Of people are going to see next week. So
it's crazy, right? Do you think about that? Like, I mean, the first one is such a cultural touchstone for so many people. I mean, the 10th highest grossing movie of 96, which was quite a year. And I mean, this is a movie that people talk about even now. I mean, it's been 25 years. This movie is an Olivia Rodrigo and a third year old. I mean, this is like, truly, this is a legendary movie, and it's finally getting the sequel. It's exciting. So what does it feel like to know that, yeah, not only just a few people are going to watch this one? I mean, the Looney Tunes are coming back in a big way, and HBO Max has brought them back in such a big way. What is that like?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because when the trailer came out for A New Legacy, mm-hmm. I got so invested in watching people watch the trailer that I was like giggling. And then I was tearing up because there was a father and son sharing their experience and remembering the original Space Jam. And wow, there are diehard fans of that original movie. And I didn't, you kind of know that, but then to see people talk about it and then to write about it, that like, oh, hey, they better, I'm hoping we're going to see this and blah, blah, you know. And there is homage to that film, certainly, but it's a different film. Space Jam, A New Legacy, it stands on its own. So, it's incredible because there's so many different iterations. Certainly the show that Eric and I are working on, the Looney Tunes cartoons. Wow.
Right.
I mean, that is classic animation. I mean, if you just like are walking by in the kitchen and it happens to be on And you might not even know if you were watching a cartoon from 49 or from, you know, 2020. I mean, it's that great. It's that cool. So, and then to have it be, you know, a feature film that we're involved with, I mean, it's, my head sometimes wants to explode because we're part of all this. I mean, I don't know if you call it a renaissance. I don't know what you think, Eric, but it's huge.
I mean, I mean, there's so much to cover in the, if you're looking back, because you got the originals that were brought kind of back in the 90s on their own. And then you have this, you know, you have to, of course, honor the original, like Mel Blanc and the crew. But then for me, as a kid growing up, I watched Jeff Bergman and crew and everyone else bring them back in their own way in the 90s with something like Tiny Toons. And then you have like those Nike Super Bowl ads that later on spawn Space Jam. So there's just all these different kind of like, for me, again, as a spectator and a fan, like all these points and important like parts of history, they're like, wow, they really spark something with an audience. And then now it's like today, like Jeff says, you know, watching the people react. There's these reaction videos on YouTube, and I've seen one. I've seen
They're
five.
Yeah.
I've seen the videos where it's like someone put together 30 reaction videos
one,
at the same time. And then you're like, wow, this has hit a lot of people our age that are now parents that are kind of like, you know, I'm of the mind like, well, I wonder – you know, what my son's going to think of this, because he's five and he's seen the originals. He knows when it's dad and when it's not dad and when it's, you know, someone else. And like,
does he know? Is he able to tell?
Like he knows when it's Mel, when it's me or when it's Jeff, like he knows and he likes them all the same.
That's amazing.
But yeah, it's definitely one of the pinch me, I'm dreaming moments. And I got to say again, and I always say this, I am so thrilled for Jeff to be Bugs in this picture.
Absolutely.
Because it's something that I think should have happened a long time ago. If there's anyone that should have been Bugs in a motion picture, post Mel, it had to have been Jeff for me. And
Eric, you know, it's funny. And thank you. It's very kind of you to say that. You know, I kind of think about Mel Blanc like Sean Connery. Connery was the original James Bond, but we had Roger Moore. We had Pierce Brosnan. We have Daniel Craig. And so everybody brings like their own spice to it. And so that's what I think is cool. I don't know that there's any kind of right or wrong, but we've all tried our best to keep the essence, like Eric said, of the original characters, the way that we know them to be in design, and, you know, the way they look, but also the way they sound, of course, too.
It's usually the world around them that changes and not them. And I think that's always comedy, too. It's always a good cause for comedy when, you know, if they question or they break the fourth wall, like what's happening here?
Yeah, the familiar interacting with the new. And I do want to say, like, it's been great to talk to you guys, but I do I hear that Bugs and Daffy are around and they are the stars of the film. So I would feel remiss if I didn't at least just check in with them about how they're feeling about the release of the movie. So Bugs and Daffy, are you here?
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till I get home?
No, I'm not. I come in complete peace. I promise you. I'm so happy. What's up, Doc, as it were, to you as well. And Daffy, is that you?
Finally, I get to speak on this podcast. And by the way, I checked the calendar and it is rabbit season.
Listen, I don't want you going for each other. What I want to know if we're going to talk a little smack. I want to know, what was it like to work on the set with LeBron?
Well, Diva? I have to say that LeBron is good. I mean, he's good, but, you know, he had to do multiple takes to get it right. He didn't just get it right in the first take. You know, he's good. He brought his game. He brought the A game, but not every day. Most days.
Most days. Okay, well, that's good. Daffy, similar experience? Working with the GOAT?
Wait a second. You got to work with LeBron? I didn't see him once on set. I think they kept us separated. I need to see my contract again.
So I want to know, guys, who out of all the tunes is the biggest problem on set? And this is because I'm into the gossip. I want to know who out of all the tunes, obviously not you guys, you're professionals here. I can tell you showed up on time for this recording. I really appreciate that. You're obviously pros. Who's the biggest issue on set out of all the tunes? Who's the biggest mess?
Well, I'd have to say it's a tie. Tie between, I won't say Daffy, I'll be polite, but I'd have to say it was probably Sam kept flubbing his lines and Porky just couldn't get anything out. So it's probably a dead heat between the two of them.
Jeez.
I will break that tie and say Tav. Every time you let that guy out of his cage, it's a mess.
Bull in a china shop.
It was a mess, now that I think about it. You know, Daffy might be right about that.
I mean, I know I have a spitting problem, but hey, I'm working on that. I'm in therapy.
You know, that just means you're enunciating. In the theater, you should see. One time I saw Jonathan Groff in something, and it was the Soak Zone. Anyway, I won't go too far into that. But listen, my big question I needed to ask you guys is, was Grandma doing all her real stunts, or was that a double? Because she's really capable of some stuff. Not to give too many spoilers to the listening audience, but Grandma turns it out.
Well, we don't want to give away too much, Matt, but... but Granny is a hot mama, let me tell you. Boy, she brought her game. Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm.
Some say this isn't your grandma's Looney Tunes, but it is. But it isn't. But it is.
She had some superpowers in that walker they gave her. You know that? Oh, brother.
Age ain't nothing but a number. Age ain't nothing but a number, Granny shows us in this movie. Guys, I want to thank you for your time so much. Thanks for stopping by. But I'm actually, this is crazy. Not to switch gears, but I think the rest of your cast is here and they're sort of upset that you're eating up all the airtime in the media. So I'm actually going to have to switch focus here to the rest of the Toons who are here. Hey, Toons, let me go through one by one. Just wanted to ask Yosemite Sam, what was the craft services like on set?
Hey, I like the craft services. Barbecued ribs. Mmm, good. Down home. I love it.
We love a good down home barbecue rib. And Elmer Fudd, early call times? How early did you have to arrive to set?
Well, that was a tough one because I'm a bit of a weight wiser.
Mm.
My awam quack is always broken.
I see. Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough for the line producer on set that day. Marvin the Martian, in terms of the other worlds we see in the movies, which one do you want to travel to the most and sort of take over?
Well, may I say thanks for having me on this podcast, but it blocks my view of Venus, therefore I shall have to delete it. But I've conquered most every planet in the universe, so I can't really... Now I'm on to galaxies.
Sure. And Fred Flintstone, you are in this movie against all odds. When are we going to see a Flintstones reboot, babe?
Well, we'll see. It might be soon. You never know. Yabba-dabba-doo.
I'm definitely got my PVR set to record that show.
Sylvester, you too?
Yes. I think so. I just have to find out how to work the remote for my son, Junior, because he's the genius in the family.
Yeah, that's why we have kids, so they can help us work our remote. I agree with you, Sylvester. Wonderful. That's why we love the Zoomers. All right. Well, great to talk to all of you, and so happy you all had such a fabulous time on set and a raucous time at that. Bugs and Daffy, listen, if you see Eric and Jeff, please tell them that the movie's incredible. Really enjoyed it. Can't wait for everyone to see it and thank them so much.
I certainly will.
You have our word.
Perfect. I knew it. Thanks, boys.
All right. Take care. And remember, Space Jam, A New Legacy in theaters, July 16th, folks. And streaming on HBO Max.
There we go. There's the company line. I knew it was coming.
Nice talking to you, Matt.
Hey, that's all, folks.
Love it. Thanks so much for checking out the HBO Max Movie Club. If you want to catch the movies we talked about in this episode, here's a list of where and when you can watch them on HBO Max. Space Jam, A New Legacy is in theaters and on HBO Max, streaming only on the ad-free plan in the U.S. for 31 days from its theatrical release. Space Jam is streaming on HBO Max until November 30th, 2021. Twister is streaming on HBO Max until August 31st, 2021. Independence Day is streaming on HBO via HBO Max until February 28th, 2022. You can also find this information in the show notes. HBO Max Movie Club is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio, hosted by me, Matt Rogers. It's executive produced by Ethan Fixell, produced by Camila Salazar, written and researched by Steve Griffin, and engineered, edited, and mixed by Matt Stillo. If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed HBO Max Movie Club, you better do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you might get your podcasts. And don't forget to watch all your favorite movies on HBO Max. Okay, bye!